If you follow Iowa sports, then you know this guy. It's David Eicholt. He's been on the show a couple times. He's back after a whirlwind of a spring, start of the year, following this women's basketball program. We talk a lot about that in the beginning of this podcast. Caitlin Clark, the Iowa program moving forward, Lucy Olson, potential transfer. Then we shift to football, Tim Lester, spring ball. Lots going on in this episode. Glad you're here. Let's have a day. Let's go. Again, for another Wash Up Walk-Ons episode. Tonight, we bring multi-time guest, beat reporter for the Iowa Hawkeyes, 247 Sports, David Eicholt, back onto the show. Maybe even a more of a controversial figure since we were just talking about before the we started rolling with social media. David's out there calling people out in the women's basketball fan base world. I've seen a couple tweets about narcissism with people. You're out there, David. You're back. We're glad to have you here. You look like, man, I got to hop on with the walk-ons, got to talk to these guys. How you been? How was basketball season? Are you recovering yet?
Dude, that's basically where I'm at right now. I think once spring football ends, I'm going to go into hibernation for like 2 weeks and just not exist and do nothing other than like binge watch House and sleep. I think that's my entire agenda. But things are good, man. It's been crazy, and the controversial – I appreciate that. But, you know, it's interesting because I did not think those tweets were going to get as much attention as they did. Boy, oh boy, I was wrong. Definitely yeah. Popped off a little bit.
Well, and what Grant and I were talking about before you, like as you hopped in before we started recording, was one of our clips that just went viral. I think it's at like 250,000 views on Instagram, Grant, and it might be at like, I don't know, 50 or so, 100 or so on Twitter. And it was just us talking about how many 5-stars they have. And in the larger discussion of the podcast, we were trying to like admire their team and how talented they were. Like it was all positive. We didn't crap on South Carolina even a little bit in that podcast. We were just like, dang, it was great to go up against them. We were trying to take down the big dog, David versus Goliath. We did our best. They're so talented. The freshman's going off. And, you know, a 30-second clip caught the algorithm of the South Carolina fan base. And I think the first one was just like, the first person just responded, "Washed up is about right." What? I was like, what do you mean? And then I started going through more and more. And they're like, well, this guy doesn't even do his research. It's actually 9 out of 14. We only have 12 players on our roster. One was a transfer. It didn't even matter. Why doesn't Bluter just recruit 5-stars? And I'm like, these people, there's some, I'm touching a nerve in 30 seconds of a clip of someone who you don't even know. Why? Yeah. And then you mentioned that, you know, these women fan bases in women's basketball fan bases in general seem to be at least, and maybe it's just because they got the spotlight in the last couple months, but they seem to be a little touchy, a little bit protective, maybe. Protective is a good word.
I think so. I think there's a couple different levels to this. Number one, it's very, I think Caitlin summed it up really well, is when it comes to the women's basketball game, welcome to the party. You're a little bit late, but Caitlin's like, you know what? I'm glad that you're paying attention to women's sports, not just Caitlin Clark, but LSU, like Cameron Brink, what Stanford did and all those other people. And then there's a certain segment of women's basketball fans that absolutely shit on all the new fans for not knowing the history of the game. I mean, do you really want to grow the game? I mean, that's what it comes down to. Like, you can't expect everybody that just started paying attention to women's basketball to know the game. Yeah. So I think there's just a certain, I don't want to say God complex, but a certain like, I'm above you because I know more about this than you. And it's almost minimizing any new people that want to come in and support women's basketball. And I think it trickles down to, I mean, look at the way Caitlin Clark's been treated by several WNBA legends and notable people in women's basketball. I've never seen anything like it. the NBA is more about rivalries, but I think it's very rare that you see somebody just absolutely dismantle somebody before they get to the league. It's really just, and all Caitlin does is ball. She doesn't say anything. Like, she just goes out there and drops 35 and 12. Like, what are we doing? So it's interesting, but I also think the blue bloods who have dominated the sport for so long, they're offended when they're not being talked about as much as they used to anymore, because there are so many other storylines. And for Iowa fans and for, you know, blue bloods, the blue bloods are mad because all the national media and everybody's talking about Caitlin Clark. That's exactly how it felt for every other fan base when they watched women's college basketball, because it was only about UConn. It was only about Tennessee. It was only about Baylor, where Kim Mulkey was. Now the script's flipped a little bit, but now the media has a huge opportunity next year to focus on Juju Watkins, to focus on Paige Beckers, and to really kind of expand the storyline outside of Caitlin Clark.
There's a lot there. I can feel it, David. You've been carrying the weight of this. You respond and interact with people at the rate that I sometimes desire to, but I don't get, like, you're obviously, you throughout the games are tweeting about Caitlin breaking another record, or you're, you know, because you tweet out like things that happen. You also tweet out, you know, when the games were going on, you're giving, you know, sort, not play by play, but like general big things that are happening. So your timeline was just filled with more original tweets from you that are sparking and are based on discussion directly around the game. And so you then get a lot more interaction with direct responses, comments, quote tweets from these other people who now have opinions about what you're saying. And it's funny. It's funny when you're not the one involved in the conversations, because then I just watch you, like, you then quote tweet back, you respond. Some other people do this too. Like, in the end, I just never, it's almost never productive. Like,
no, it's really
even
not.
Getting into the conversation, you know, like, have you ever quote tweeted someone back who misinterpreted you, or like completely took what you said wrong, or like assumed something and actually felt like bad? I'm not coming after you. I'm just saying everybody in general Twitter, it never feels good. Even if you like correct somebody and you're like, no, that's not what I meant. It's just like, it's such, like, do you wish Twitter was
people,
just not a thing?
People interpret it how they want to interpret it. It's just like a text message. And that's the hard part about social media. And that's why you need to be very careful about what you tweet. I mean, I'll even go back to, if you talk about the toxic discourse of women's basketball, I'll go back to the column I wrote 2 years ago about Caitlin Clark and why she should have been the undisputed national player of the year over Aaliyah Boston. And you see how the discourse has been with LSU Iowa, South Carolina Iowa, in regards to issues that are off the basketball court. I got attacked by Taylor Rooks. I got attacked by a lot of people publicly, and I just didn't respond, because the second I respond, that's exactly what they want to do.
I know.
So it's kind of pick your poison, but you're exactly right. I mean, it's all an echo chamber. People are going to interpret it how they want to interpret it. And it's really hard to get an actual formed opinion about someone and how they feel about a certain topic when you're on social media.
Man, it's unbelievable to me too. Like, the people who go, okay, so you go back to what you were saying about the new fans of college women's basketball. And I think a good word for it was like gatekeeping.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people who have happened to, basically UConn fans or South Carolina fans who have been good in the last decade or before, or fans that are in the older generation that had fandom of a team when they were good, call it Tennessee or somebody like that, who's not relevant as much right now. Or I'll even see it from the Iowa fans who are like, who then get called out because they say something about Caitlin. Somebody says Caitlin sucks or doesn't deserve this, or so-and-so's better. Iowa fan responds. Other fan says, you only started watching when Caitlin came into college. And they're like, well, actually I've been going to Iowa women's basketball games for the last 17 years of my life. And it's like, what are we doing?
It's growing. I hate to say it, but
that's the thing.
It's helping. And it's as mindless as it is, at least it's being talked about to a different level now.
Yeah. I mean, that if there's one end statement about the whole thing, is if people didn't care, then there wouldn't be any discussion. Like there would, even if it's pointless discussion, there wouldn't be any of it if people weren't bought into their players or their teams. So it's good. It gets so political. If you are a fan of Caitlin Clark, you're racist because she's getting all the awards and all the attention because she's white. Like, it's just like, what are we doing? Come on.
It's so toxic. And that's why I've tried to stay away from that side of the conversation. It just gets to a point where I'll let LeBron sum it up. I'll let a lot of the other NBA players who have long supported women's basketball. If you don't respect Caitlin Clark's game, you're just a flat out hater. The numbers speak for itself. If you have eyes and you can objectively look at a basketball game, Caitlin Clark is without a doubt the best player in women's college basketball. I don't think it's particularly close. There is no player in women's basketball history that could take this Iowa team and last year's Iowa team to the national title game. And that's not dismantling a lot of the other great players that have been on these teams. Like Kate Martin's one of the best leaders I've ever covered of what she's meant to the team. Monica Sinano, third all-time leading scorer in Iowa history. Like, Iowa's had players in place. Sydney Folter is going to be a star next year. Hannah Stolke is going to be really, really good as well. We'll see what happens if Iowa ends up landing Lucy Olson, the Villanova transfer, who will be visiting on Tuesday, third leading scorer in the nation last year. But Caitlin is without a doubt the most polished and most accomplished offensive player. And I'll even say men's and women's college basketball history. There's just nobody that's changed the game like her. So if people don't respect her at this point, it's just, you say, okay, like, you know, they're wrong. They're, like, all the numbers and all the statistical data and everything like that are all in Caitlin's favor. And on top of that, look at the viewership numbers that Caitlin and Iowa's helped attract. I mean, it's,
yeah.
Her public profile is just absolutely skyrocketed. I think before her March Madness run last year, Tyler, she was at 150,000 followers on Instagram. She's at 1.95 million now.
She's almost at 2.
Yeah, I bet she'll be at 2 after she gets drafted tomorrow.
Wow. She skyrocketed even just in the last like 4 weeks, because the last time I checked, I thought she was like just over a million.
She was at 1.1. I did the research today. I think she was at 1.1 4 weeks ago.
That's nuts.
So what is that, about half of your followers then, David?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, David just said everybody go follow.
It's crazy though, when she first got to Iowa, I remember her Instagram, she had like maybe 9,000 followers. She had like 350 followers on Twitter when she committed to Iowa.
Yeah.
And just to kind of see how it's evolved is absolutely mind-boggling.
Well,
it also tells me I'm way too chronically online.
Did you guys see the SNL clip? She's on fucking SNL, man.
Yeah,
that's
dude.
Insane.
That is crazy. Like, she's just closing down SNL. Like, what?
She killed it, too.
I absolutely crushed it. I thought it was hilarious.
Some
people are very, very upset, though, that she was using the cue cards.
Like,
that everybody reads off of.
What do you think news anchors do every single night?
Yeah.
They're upset she wasn't Seth Meyers already.
Or presidents when they give, like, long speeches. Yeah. Can you speak to, maybe you can't, but I'm sure that to some extent you can, her growth and development as someone who had to handle all of the off the court stuff from freshman year to now? Like, what did you see? Because you got to be closer to the team, interviews with them, follow them around to games, the last two Final Fours and such. She had a lot of, I think everybody that followed Iowa in the beginning of her career kind of knew that she was different, maybe even more so than like Megan Gustafson. Like, immediately as a freshman, we knew Caitlin was like, oh, she's probably going to be the best women's basketball player we've had in a long time. And that's saying a lot, because we just had Megan come through and we knew that end of her freshman year, definitely in her sophomore year. But last year, getting the 2 seed, running to the table to the national championship, beating South Carolina, that's when things started to get absolutely nuts. And I remember it took me, gosh, probably 3.5 weeks to read that Wright Thompson article on her. But I'm a slow reader, and that was just so long. But it was great. And it said in there, I think he asked Caitlin about it, her life over the last year. And she even said, like, yeah, it's been crazy. Like, it's been wild. She has had to deal with a lot. And I'm just curious. I don't know if we'll ever get her on this show, but the maturity development of a 21, 22-year-old kid to deal with the stardom, unexpected stardom that she's got. Like, how did she evolve handling all that over the last few years?
You know, I think you need to put it in context too. And by the way, I cannot endorse that Wright Thompson article more. I thought that was arguably the best piece of sports journalism I've ever read.
It was great. Honestly,
he's absolutely phenomenal. Put it in additional context. Remember her freshman year? She was playing in front of cardboard cutouts. She was doing online class. So it's not even like she was eased into it. Her first year was basically like World War Z. Like, she was just existing in her own little bubble. She was hyping up cardboard cutouts when she hit the game winner against Iowa State. Like, she hyped up her dog cardboard cutout. Like,
I remember a story that. Where she was like,
you know, Monica kind of told on her about that and hyped him up, like went over, she like hugged a cardboard cutout of her dog. And then you read the Wright Thompson article, and Caitlin, you could tell very early, like, she is a player that wears her heart on her sleeve, and she's probably as passionate as any player I've ever covered as far as the craft that they have to, you know, whether it be football, whether it be basketball. I think it speaks volumes to numerous things. One, her family, her upbringing, and the support system that she has. Like, you could tell they have instilled the right values in her and her just to be able to handle everything. I cannot remember really one time where she is really messed up PR wise or saying anything in public. A lot of the hate's just from comments that other people make to defend Caitlin or to attack Caitlin. And that's where the kind of bashing comes into play. Yeah. Caitlin, you know, complains to the refs probably a little bit too much. I think after she got out of Carver for the last time, I think she really stopped doing it for the most part. But I think you need to give Lisa Bluter a lot of credit. The culture that she's put in place to be able to handle all of that, to always uplift Caitlin. And how about the team aspect? Do you know how easy it would be for the team to be so pissed off at her and be so jealous of her and to be so envious? And they're the ones that continue to boost her up, to defend her. Kate Martin was a big, really instrumental in taking care of her and watching Caitlin mature. I think we've really seen since that South Carolina run where you just knew that her life was never going to be the same. Because if you remember going back to that South Carolina game last year, there was several segments on XM radio and on women's basketball talk shows about how they should cancel the rest of the women's tournament because nobody's going to beat South Carolina. And then to watch Caitlin do that and to put up 41-8 in that game, and that's when she really took off. So I think it's, you need to give a lot of credit to Lisa Bluter, give Caitlin a lot of credit for staying true to her morals and to really handle all the stuff that she's had to handle. Because not to go down this road too much, but you think back to that interview after she won her first Wooden Award last year, she was asked one question about her game and everything else was about Angel Reese. Everything else was about LSU. Everything else got into the racial aspect of it. And that totally blindsided her. Wright Thompson wrote that in the article too. And for her to handle that and have the emotional maturity and to really not let anything slip when she is probably carrying the weight of the world on her shoulders, it's been really remarkable to watch, especially since how she hasn't been burnt out. I mean, Tyler, she's going to get drafted tomorrow night. She gets 13 days in between training camp starts and when she gets drafted. Then she's going to play a 40-game regular season with in front of probably sellout crowds with four times the cost of tickets than they were last year.
Yeah.
36 of the games are on national TV. Like, she's going to go through a 2-year span of where she basically runs the world, a good portion of the sports world. And for her to be able to stay true to that, if she continues to kind of develop as a leader and kind of continue on the right path, it probably is going to be one of the more remarkable things I've ever watched.
As you go through, like, as you talk all that out, and I asked the question with this in mind, but it just makes it more clear when I listen to someone else, like, kind of lay it out step by step by step. Chronologically, here's how it got bigger and bigger and bigger. There's just so many places there in the equation where, like, a lot of people would crack. Like, they would absolutely, like, if, do you understand if I would have been good at something, if I would have been that good at something, the best, And like, I'm a pretty good, like, I was like a run. I was right in the middle. I call me right down the middle kind of dude, like good dude. I would have talked so much shit all the time.
Oh yeah.
My interviews would have been like so obnoxious. Like it just would have like, if this falls, like yeah. if this happens to the wrong person, and it does sometimes. And then because they don't handle, you know, some stuff off of the court or the field or wherever they play sports, then it kind of affects what happens on the court. Man, it's just so impressive. Like the amount of pressure and like, you just think like when everybody that's listening to this lays their head down on the pillow at the end of the night, like you went through a pretty casual day. You know, like you can go to the grocery store, you walk to your car in and out of work or wherever you're going. Like no one knows, like there's no, you don't have to be on. Like you might have an important meeting at 9 a.m. on a Tuesday. And that's where you really have to be on for 30 minutes because you're given your part of the report or the presentation. It feels like her life is, she has to be on 24/7. And I honestly thought, I was worried about that going into the tournament because I watched the Big Ten Championship game in Minneapolis live. I was there. It was awesome. Great game. And her and the other players kind of looked tired to me a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I was like, damn, like this is, but they had played good games, right? They had just beaten Ohio State in the home game, like pretty handily. They obviously ran the table, won that, but I'm like, I don't know if they can do this for the entire tournament. Like, I don't know if this pressure that keeps building and the storyline that keeps building can really keep going. And it just did. It's unbelievable. And I think you going back, I hate that it's a thing and that other people won't respect it. Who are those who are fans of, I don't know, UConn or whoever. But I think that's the stat. I think it was, it might have been MJD. I don't know why they were talking about it on their show. But like, I think Maurice Jones-Drew and a few other analysts on a sports talk show in the morning were talking about how the reason it's so impressive, more like the reason by far and away she should be considered the GOAT, if you're going to have that discussion, is because she did it at Iowa.
I think that was LeSean McCoy.
Oh, okay. Yeah. It was.
But I think it was Speak. If I remember right. It was like,
sounds right.
Yeah.
And I think I saw you rebutted the same kind of idea to somebody that was like, so you're telling me if Caitlin and Paige switch lives for the last 4 years, and Caitlin, and obviously a magical scenario that you can't, like, you wouldn't for sure know that this happens, but Caitlin then goes on to do everything that she did at Iowa at UConn, and she was that great, and she led them to three or four national championships. But because she has other five stars around her, that, you know, and that is a reason that they won championships, she ends up scoring less points. She doesn't become the all-time scoring record leader. She's not as high on assists. She wins maybe a few less awards. But because now she's still the best player on that team, now she's the GOAT. Like, it doesn't make any sense to me. And I do, and I forever, and I, again, I've never gotten into the conversation because I don't want to go back and forth. I think in professional sports, I think the championship, the ring, is a valid resume piece. Because when you're in professional sports, you are not under the same limitations, or not you so much. Well, you as well, but your teammates or your potential teammates are not under the limitations to, like, you know, if she goes to the WNBA and she wants to build a championship roster and she is truly the GOAT, well, one, she has 10 years to do it, or however many years it takes. There is no 4-year limitation that's like, oh, you're up, time's up.
Yep.
But also there's contracts and negotiations and things like that where you're able to, and I guess it's starting to become a little bit like this in college as well now with the transfer portal, but other great players are going to want to come to be with you and, like, you know, like create the story. Like when LeBron goes from Cleveland to Miami that first time and it's like, hey, we're going to make the big three. It's me, Bosch, and Wade. Like, she has that ability to kind of like sway some teammates at Iowa, especially, and even at Iowa where, like, again, Gustafson just did what she did. We made an Elite Eight. We were a top 20 program, maybe a top 15 program over the last few years before she comes in. Yeah. But even
I would say about top 15.
Yeah. But even then, it's like you look, and this goes back to our clip. Like you look at the, and again, it's not a knock on Kate or anybody else on that roster. It's just because I think arguably Bluter got more out of what she had on the roster than anybody in the country. It's just like when you take non-top 50 teammates and you're the kind of the point of the spear, the tip of the spear, and you go do two national championship appearances in a row, what are we talking about? Like, that's nuts.
And that's, I think you bring up good points. And again, I tweeted this out and I got a lot of crap for it and I still stand by it. When did rings become such a big deal in college sports when you're debating who the GOAT is?
That's what I'm saying.
And as you mentioned, I mean, you have a lot more flexibility if you want to play out your main, your contract. Okay. But then you can go leave and go join a better team. Yeah. I mean, you could do it with the transfer portal, but it's just, it's not normalized yet to that point. And there was no chance that Caitlin was going to leave Iowa given the story of everything. And I think it's just, quite frankly, it's ridiculous that this is even a debate. Like, with all due respect to Breonna Stewart, with all due respect to all the UConn people, a couple things. One, there's more parity now than there ever has been in women's basketball. It still has a ways to go. Still has a ways to go.
It's going to grow a lot in the next couple of years with how much hype it's gotten, though.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, again, Juju Watkins is up next. She's going to, you know, I think she could challenge Caitlin's scoring record. Like, she is that good.
And she started off on pace, right?
Mm-hmm. But she also takes a lot more shots than Caitlin ever did. And remember, Caitlin's freshman year was shorter due to COVID.
What do you?
And
I heard Caitlin takes 40 shots a game.
Yeah, I did to tell Kim Mulkey. But the thing is, when do we become so fixated on national championships? And again, I'm not watering it down. It's obviously the biggest goal in sports. But Caitlin bringing that team to back-to-back Final Fours, to back-to-back national championships, like that South Carolina team last year, Tyler, if they go undefeated, they're probably ranked the top five, top four team that's ever laced up.
Yeah.
And the only reason they're not is because one single, you know, again, with all due respect to Kate Martin, everybody else, Monica Sinano, Caitlin took him down. She dropped 41. And she gets almost no credit. Because the fourth leading scorer in the national title game goes like this on camera and follows her around. She gets no credit because of the troll attempt.
I know. It's just wild.
It's in you know, this will upset a lot of people, but I've said it a couple times. I give Angel Reese a lot of credit for being a marketing genius and the way that she's been able to amass this big popularity.
For sure.
But why are we acting like she's a generational talent? Like, the same category. No, she's not even going to go top five in the draft tomorrow. She's going to be the fourth post player to get out. She's good. She's going to be good. But she's not Caitlin Clark. She's not even Rekia Jackson from Tennessee. She's not Cameron Brink. She's not Leah Edwards. Like, these are all better players than Angel Reese. But again, the storyline's great. She's helped push basketball forward, and she's a great marketer. And she's going to get her jersey retired. She brought a national title. Like, she's still a hell of a player.
Yeah, I think maybe part of that, when you're talking about the marketing side of things, because the popularity, women's basketball is in such an interesting position because it's not a sport. It's now been thrust into the mainstream. Your average sport fan who likes college football and college basketball now is like, they're toeing the water with like, oh, I'm a women's basketball fan now too, right? We talked about the new fans. And I think maybe the general population fan bases were getting a little bit confused with popularity, marketability, screen time, how much some of these players are in the limelight and their direct correlation to, like, if we're going to rank them talent-wise, just blank, you know, without faceless basketball players. Because most other sports probably correlate a little bit more, and there's some outliers, but like the best players are the most viewed on TV. They have the most followers. They have the most. Women's basketball isn't necessarily that way. It's there's still a correlation. It's not as strong, I would argue. And I don't know how you would ever do that study, but
yeah,
like Flage is I don't know where she ranks this year.
I was just about to bring her up.
I mean, she's got this entire other side of her who's a rapper. She's got like a million followers on Instagram. Yeah, she was a part of a large part of the national championship team 2 years ago, and then this year's team. I think she's probably the best player on this year's team. But she gets a lot more love or a lot more attention or probably a lot more brand deals than players that are just as good as her or in the same area because she's got this entrepreneurial side to her. And that's where women's basketball is. And Caitlin clearly has that as well. I mean, Caitlin, she's got, again, SNL. She's got every big deal on earth. I don't know how much money she's made at this point, but I mean, Jesus Christ, it's unbelievable.
Don't look at some valuations because I 100% guarantee you they're wrong. I mean, if Caitlin doesn't have $10 million in the bank right now, I'd be stunned.
Yeah, that's what I would have put it at too.
Yeah. And you know, again, I want to go back to Angel really quick. Like, she's a great player. Like, I'm not trying to water down her talent wise. I think Caitlin is just that much better. And I feel like it's gotten to the point where if somebody brings up Caitlin, they automatically throw an Angel Reese. But why they throw an Angel Reese? It's because the marketability. But and this is an interesting question. This is something that has to change too. Is Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese, the collective, the two of them, are they bigger than the WNBA right now? I would make a legit case that they are.
Yeah.
They're more well-known, I think, at this point.
But what does that mean?
You just say that college basketball in general is bigger than the WNBA right now.
Yeah.
So if you take the two biggest stars from a bigger sport, then I don't think you can make an argument against that at all. No.
I know. It's tough, too, because like as the individual player, as Caitlin, I mean, there's reasons to stay, but there's nothing left to do.
No.
Unless you – I mean – at Iowa, you can read the writing on the wall. The roster is not going to be in a spot, even if Caitlin stayed. Losing Kate, losing Gabby, the roster is probably not going to be in a spot next year where they were in a position to make a third run at a national championship game. Never put it past them, but it's just so tough to do. And
I think they could have been a Sweet 16, like second weekend team.
Yeah, for sure.
I think they can be, honestly. I think Lisa's going to redo their entire offense. They're going to change up the system.
I already saw like an early top 25 and the Hawks weren't in it. And I'm like, they're sleeping already.
If they get Lucy, they'll throw them in probably the 20 to 23 range.
So Lucy's from Villanova, Lucy Olson. She's 5'9". She was the third leading scorer this year. I watched a highlight of her against Marquette earlier today. Cause I was like, I saw another tweet about her scheduling a visit next week or something. But then I also saw some Maddie Scherchick from Kentucky. Also a guard, 5'10", that's pretty good. Started at Oregon, then transferred to Kentucky for the last couple of years, and now she's got like a sixth-year COVID grad year to spend, and she's potentially in the mix as well. Are they competing for the same transfer portal spot there, or would we take them both? How much can Bluter throw out there? How many scholarships do we have? How many spots are we looking for? What do you think there?
I mean, Iowa right now only has one scholarship unless people leave. And I don't think anybody's going to leave, but I'm also not going to rule it off the table. I think we'll really have some clarity on that within the next week. But right now, Iowa's prioritizing Lucy Olson. I just, with all due respect to Maddie Scheer, there's a reason why Lucy's schedule visit is Tuesday and Maddie's is Thursday. I think Iowa ideally would like to try to find a way to wrap that up before Maddie gets on campus. But at the same time, there's a lot of people after Lucy. Like, there's almost every school in the country at this point.
I was going to say, it's probably everybody.
Maryland, UConn, LSU's trying to prioritize her a little bit, but LSU's kind of after everybody right now. And if I'm Iowa, I just say three little words, Haley Van Lith.
Yeah.
And watch what Kim Mulkey did to her. I mean, and then Mulkey basically admitted it too. That was the craziest part. I don't know if you saw the quote, but she just goes like, yeah, she wanted to get back to her natural position and go somewhere where she's more comfortable in their system. Like, she just completely like admitted to ruining Haley Van Lith.
I'm sad about that because Haley on Louisville was a dog and it was an awesome storyline. Like, she played a good little like villain sort of other superstar last year when we played them in, I think the Elite Eight was when we played Louisville. And that was so fun to watch those two go back and forth. And then Haley was just like, clearly handcuffed this year, and it sucked because she was so sick to watch, and then she just didn't look like herself at all.
Yeah, and I mean, I equate it when she went over to LSU, it was the Monstars. I mean, right when she joint committed, I was like, if Iowa plays LSU again, it's going to be, you know, Michael Jordan, Caitlin Clark versus the Monstars, I mean, from Space Jam. But yeah, so Iowa has one scholarship available right now. They are prioritizing Lucy Olsen. She's going to be on campus on Tuesday. When it comes to Olsen right now, I think she stays out east or stays in the Midwest based on what one source told me. But USC is trying to make a run at her too. And if she goes to USC, that the Trojans are going to be a national title team next year with the talent they're bringing in, plus Juju. NIL's a factor, but not the most important factor in the world. Lucy wants to win, but she also knows how to follow in the footsteps of a legend. I mean, if you remember a couple of years ago, Maddie Segrist led the nation in scoring, and Lucy took over for Maddie. So she's able to kind of step into those roles. And so I think if you talk about it, there's no perfect replacement for Caitlin Clark because it's impossible to replace the production. But if Iowa lands Lucy and they have Lucy at the one, Taylor McCabe at the two, Sydney Falter at the three, Hannah Stolke at the four, and Ava Hayden, who's a 6'5" freshman from Oregon coming in, starting at the post. I mean, right now, Tyler, I'll tell you, Iowa's going to be a top five team in the Big Ten next year. I'm not picking them to win the conference, but they are going to be – they're not going anywhere. They're going to still be good next year.
Yeah. I don't see why – well, and here's the thing, too. I think there's a pretty bit – and again, like we said, the parity will probably keep sort of expanding itself through the top 25. But if you look at, like, the men's top 25 – versus the women's top 25, it is a little bit more clearly segmented over on the women's side. Like, it is top heavy.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you call it, I don't know, this year it was probably Iowa, South Carolina. It was maybe 7 or 8 teams that were clearly better than the next 8 and then the next 8. Whereas, like, anybody in the top 25 could, like, any night just kill anyone in college basketball except for UConn at the end of the year. And it was like, so, you know, not that I'm not saying it's not hard to make it back to the Sweet 16, but you think about 16 teams, like, it you should definitely win the first ball game in the tournament. Like, I think that they should 100% be able to win the first ball game in the tournament, and then, you know, be in a battle, be in a good spot, have a good shot at making the Sweet 16. If they just land a transfer like this and then put those four out on the court. We mentioned that Hayden girl because we're like, we were kind of just talking about how, like, we just need size. We need more than 6'2". Hannah's doing everything she can. And
God bless Hannah Stolke, honestly.
Oh, my God.
That is not her natural position. She still performed very, very well.
Yeah.
And there were so many mismatches, and she just kept battling. I know there was some frustration with her at the end of the year with certain things, but at the end of the day, like, Iowa did the most with what they had.
Yeah.
They just need more size. Moving Hannah, the four, I think is going to do huge things for the team next year, but God bless her for going in night in, night out, trying to compete with those 6'5", 6'6".
If we can get a 6'5" and that girl in her freshman year can play physically, and even if her skills aren't refined, and I don't know anything about her as an actual basketball player, but if we could just have the hands and the height inside, like, we'll take it. And, you know, McCabe needs to come along a lot in a lot of ways, but she's obviously a sniper in that sense. I feel comfortable with her handling the ball. Obviously, a Falter, I think a Falter, I'm full on the Sydney bandwagon. I think she's a star next year. I think she's going to be one of the most fun to watch. And
she does everything well. Like, that's the thing. Like, she's aggressive. It took me so long to realize she's 5'11" because of how consistent she was rebounding the basketball and battling under. Like, it's amazing what she does and for how strong she is. But, you know, at the end, also too, you need to think about this. Iowa just needs to do well enough next year. And this sounds so short-sighted. They need to do well enough to stay nationally relevant because I'll tell you, man, that 2025 class, the potential, you can mark it down right now. If what I think is going to happen happens, Iowa women will have a top 5 national class in the 2025. Combine that with a number 9 class in 2024. Iowa's not going to go anywhere.
Yeah.
I really, really think that they have a chance to return to a Final Four within the next 4 or 5 years.
And that 25 class is the one that's headlined by Addison Deal, right?
Yeah, and she's different, man.
She's the real deal.
Yeah,
you could say.
Shout out Ray Gun.
Have they already made that shirt?
Yeah, I don't know what the NIL process that looks like. I mean, I she can't get paid anything, obviously, but like. The branding behind it and everything.
We're gonna have to.
I believe her cousin goes to Grinnell too.
We're gonna have to sway her to do a t-shirt deal with us. Quickly. So we've talked a lot of women's basketball. It's been women's basketball the last however many weeks. We'll get to football here in a second. I do want to quickly touch on the Madden Greenway. Do we have any chance? I see people saying like it's going to be tough to get Greenway to Iowa City, and I don't know what they know or if they're just saying that. Are we just going to miss out on a what would they call it?
She's going to be a superstar. She's
legacy.
You talk about a flat out dog bucket getter,
dude. She does
so
score.
Good.
Do you have any idea on her or like you would think? Both parents going to Iowa, we'd have a pretty good shot. But I see other people like, it's going to be tough to get Madden.
It's going to be tough, but I also think Iowa's positioned themselves well. I mean, if you had asked me 3 months ago, I would say Iowa's on the outside looking in, which sounds crazy because I remember there when she got offered by Minnesota in eighth grade, they interviewed her and she was like, "Yeah, I'm really excited about the Minnesota offer, but I really want to go to Iowa." Like she was quoted in the article saying. And to go from that to now, again, I think Iowa's done everything they can. They've obviously put the full court press on her. But this is not want to say a mega star, but like she's just different, man. She's just so crafty, can do everything well, three-level score. UConn wants her bad. I mean, I don't know if South Carolina's offered yet, but Tennessee really wanted her bad. She was very interested in Tennessee, but with the coaching change there, we'll see. Duke's going to want her, you know, this is going to be a national level recruit. And she's been to Iowa plenty of times, obviously. But I will say after, I believe she attended the home finale against Ohio State.
She did.
Iowa moved significantly up her list after that.
I don't know what more a high school kid could want. I really don't.
Yeah. That's kind of where I was thinking too. But yeah, so she's 2026. I think you look at her, you look at Johnston, Iowa's Jenica Lewis, who's a fringe five-star as well. I was in the thick of things with them. I think a big thing
there. Watched her play in person. I did. It got the lowdown. I did some recruiting on her this year at the Iowa State tournament.
Oh, yeah?
I didn't, but she's good. I watched her play.
She's a good pass. Great passer. I think the big thing there, and maybe this is more so my speculation than anything I'm hearing, so take it for what it's worth. I'm very curious if Madden and Jenica could work well in the backcourt together. And if they're thinking about that themselves, but if they found a way to make it work and Lisa and them found a way to make it work, I mean, that's a national championship level backcourt. Like those two have that upside. They're great, great high school players.
Well, it all sounds exciting. I don't, and I know that you don't have full control of this, but like it would be such a missed opportunity for the brand and for the program to not ascend to a perennial national contender with the amount of momentum that they've gotten.
Absolutely.
You don't get very many options. We deal with this in football all the time. And I think it's what people are always asking, like, how do we take that next step and become like in the Big Ten, what you're probably now going to ask for of Iowa is like a second tier team. You've got Michigan, you've got Ohio State, maybe throw Oregon in there. How do we become just as good every year as Washington, Penn State, Wisconsin, and Iowa? How do we be that fourth team? Whereas, you know, over the last few years, maybe over the last decade, you're like, well, we kind of teeter on that. Sometimes we're there, sometimes we're not. And we've had this discussion on here. It's like, it's really hard to elevate an entire program, the floor of an entire program, especially over like a couple years. You're talking about like decades that it takes to do that. And Iowa basketball, women's basketball is in a spot right now that you just don't get. You don't get that much room for elevation, I feel like, as a program ever. You know, you don't. So it just feels like it's a time to capitalize. And I don't think Bluter needs me to tell her that. I'm pretty sure she's aware.
Yeah, you're exactly right, though. I mean, I think you summed it up very well. And that's why it's so important for Iowa to stay relevant next year. And if they get the class in 2025, I'm not, you know, I'm going to say the Caitlin Clark effect, but Iowa does not land Caitlin Clark without Megan Gustafson.
Yeah.
For what Megan Gustafson did. I think she's not talked about enough. And I understand why, just because we firsthand watched Caitlin. But Megan Gustafson winning National Player of the Year, being the first Big Ten player, I think, in however many years to do that, getting Iowa the Elite Eight that year, I think that really kind of kicked down the door for Caitlin. Not to go back to the SNL skit and the terminology of it, but that's what really has helped Caitlin shine as well. And, you know, players in the future, I mean, Iowa does not land ass and deal without Caitlin Clark.
Yeah.
That's just the reality of it. So I also think it's easier to take that level up with basketball than football, just because there's so much more at times that football takes and a lot more pieces that have to work than basketball. Basketball, you can flip a roster in a year.
Yeah.
Look, watch what Calipari's going to do with Arkansas.
You can flip a roster, but elevating your national, how you're perceived nationally amongst everybody else is still to, like, you know, I'm trying to think of an example. Missouri football this year was a top 10 team. They're not going to be thought of as like a contender for the national championship unless they do that for the next 5 or 10 years. Then people are really going to start to think like, oh, Missouri's just every year. They're right there. But you're right. I think it's easier in basketball. 11 guys on football, on offense and defense, so many pieces.
Yeah,
it's tough. It's tough in football. But anyway, let's talk about football real quick to end the backside of the show. Is Tim Lester our Lord and Savior? And is he bringing, what is he bringing? I'm seeing all good things from people who are posting Hawkeye football. The account themselves has posted like a 5-minute video of him and the quarterbacks and him mic'd up at practice the other day. Players are starting to come out with quotes about how he's a problem solver and he's got all this. Tell me about Lester and the first impressions of him.
Yeah, first of all, before I start complimenting what I've heard about him, I want to be very clear. I'm in believe it when I see it mode with the Iowa.
I think everybody is.
But man, I tell you, Lester's made a really, really good impression. I was impressed even going back to his opening press conference when he talked about being aggressive and being adaptable, because I think you look at the way Iowa's offense has run the past couple of years, it was not aggressive and it was incredibly predictable. Everybody knew what Iowa was going to run. My sister, who does not watch football at all, could tell you exactly what Iowa was going to do on a play. Okay, that's just the reality of it. But when I hear the defensive players talk about there's a lot of motion on the offense, they're trying to trick the defense's eyes, the offense getting excited, that there's taking deep shots down the field, they're lining up half the time in the gun, half the time under center, there's a couple RPO packages. I mean, you can't help but get excited. And now I think there's going to be a steep learning curve. I think there's going to be a lot of frustration. I don't think it's going to look good on Saturday, but I would also advise people this. There's brand new terminology.
I love that. I don't think it's going to look good.
I don't think it's going to go well. Maybe I'll come back and apologize. But one, Cade McNamara is not playing, and he's going to be the starting quarterback this year. So I think people need to have that in the back of their head too. You're installing an all-new playbook. You're trying to get an offense and guys that were recruited not to run a lot of motion, having so many different parts that have to work together to make the play work, right? Even before the ball snapped, avoid pre-snap penalties, et cetera. But man, it's hard for me not to get at least a little bit optimistic because, again, Luke Lachey is back fully healthy. I'm all in on Luke Lachey. I think he's going to be an All-American this year.
Hell yeah. Mackey Award. Let's go.
I love what Iowa has in the running back room. I think they still need to land another wide receiver if they get the scholarship situation figured out. But Caleb Brown loves the offense. He talked about how Lester is a problem solver. He talked about how Iowa has, quote, a lot of answers on offense. Again, I'm in believe it till I see it mode, but if it comes to life with what they're describing, I mean, I think, and this sounds like not a big jump at all, but I mean, you guys obviously watch every game, you analyze it, everything else. If Iowa gets to a top 85 offense and top 90 offense in year one, that is absolutely outstanding growth in year one under a new offensive coordinator. And when you're trying to completely overhaul the system,
jump 40 spots. Yeah.
Philosophically, I still think they're going to be the same philosophically, but I think there's going to be a lot of different moving pieces that at least stay true to Kirk's vision. When he got hired, Lester got hired. That's what I was told, is Lester wanted the freedom to run what he wants to do. But he also understands the way KF runs his program, and there's a certain level of respect that was there. And I'll go to Deacon Hill, a quote that he said, the biggest thing that stood out to me when he was asked about the offense is, Kirk's been involved with the offensive line. The offense has been the Lester show. And I think that's music in everybody's ears.
I like both of those things because obviously we've struggled on the line a little bit on the last few years as well. And that's not, there's a lot of, we've been over the various reasons for that. But I think the big thing there also is everybody just sits back and assumes that Kirk's got, he's pulling the strings. He's the puppet master up there. He's like, nope, we're not running that play. He's shooting down plays like live on the field when Brian was trying to call him or something. I think the results put everybody just in an absolute tailspin the last few years offensively. So people were just like making up answers. Their brain is creating like wild, irrational scenarios of to try to answer why we were so bad. If we have a top 85 offense and we bring back the defense that we bring back and we play the schedule that we do, which isn't easy, but it's not the hardest schedule in the Big Ten. Tell me we're not competing for we're not in the running for a Big Ten championship bid. Like there's a chance. I think there's a chance there still.
I think Iowa would be more so competing for a playoff spot than a Big Ten championship.
Well, that too. Yeah, because we've talked about that as well, where now with the SEC and the Big Ten like they are, three teams are going to get in.
I think at least three will. I think there could be four, just given the quality of the teams this year. But, I mean, if that's the thing. But you also need to remember a couple of things. One, you're replacing the greatest punter that's ever graced college football in Torrey Taylor.
I don't know how to say his last name, Dakin or Dakin. I saw him hit a bomb in a clip the other day. I'm not even worried about it. I ain't worried.
I want to see who they replace at Gunner.
That's big.
Cooper DeJean.
Yeah.
And obviously Terry Roberts held that down before. I want to see how the return game does. I trust LeVar. Again, I think it's well noted. I think LeVar is one of the best in the business at his craft. I want to see how Iowa holds down the other corner spot with Cooper gone.
Yeah.
I think if there's a good corner in the portal available, I think you pursue it considering the talent that you have on that defense. But if Iowa has a top 85 offense and a top 10 special teams unit and a top 5 defense, a top 3, I think it'll be a top 3 defense. Iowa wins at least 10 games next year.
Hell yeah, David. That's all I need to hear. Signing off. Let's go.
Yeah, I got your clip for you. I got you.
I'm serious though. Like they've proven they proved that they could do it with the worst offense in college football, literally, statistically. And we lost Logan. Lee. And we lost Evans. But like I don't think anybody's worried about the defensive side of the ball. I don't think anybody is.
Xavier Wampus probably primed to take a big step forward. You have Nick Jackson, who's in his Jordan Bohannon year at this point. He's the Animal House guy going on his seventh year. He has a shot being the NCAA's all-time leading tackler as well. Then you have Jay Higgins, who, my God.
We have the best linebackers in the country as a core.
I agree. No doubt. And Sebastian Castro.
Who is a dog.
He'll be... Yeah, I think he could be Iowa's best all-around defender. And if he improves his athleticism and his speed a little bit, like it's just verified 40 speed and a couple of measurables, that's a guy who goes top two rounds in the NFL draft.
That man,
he's a freak.
That man knows how to play football. He's a football player is what we call him. It's exciting. How do you have any energy left to cover the last – what are we in? This is the fourth week of spring ball or this is the last week?
This is going to be the last week. Yeah, between men's basketball, women's basketball, football. The portal opens Tuesday. I basically drive up to Starbucks every day and they have my order ready for me. They literally don't even let me order. They just let me pull around the front and it's the
Like, hey, it's David.
Yeah. No, they don't even do that. They recognize my car at this point.
Jesus.
They're saying, all right, there'll be this. I'm like, all right, cool. See you in a minute. And it's the Dan Campbell, the 20 ounces, Pike Place, two shots of espresso. After a 33-ounce water in the morning.
Okay, hydrate for. That's good. That's good. I like the water before because I care about your health, you know.
Thank you, man. I appreciate that. I know you're always looking out for me.
Yeah. That's crazy. So that you like if football is going to wrap up and then do you get to like chill for a little bit?
Off season starts, the second portal opening, obviously, we'll see what happens with basketball, but trust me, I will, I'll be taking a few vacations over the summer.
No doubt.
It's been a year, especially all stuff with women's basketball too, on top of everything else.
Yeah. The three of us who are visible on the YouTube version of this, comment your favorite thing about David below, by the way. Hit us with that engagement. We love the engagement on YouTube. Or your least favorite thing about David. That would be fun.
Yeah, that's easier. Easily, yeah.
That'll really drive some engagement. Kevin wasn't at this.
Just tag all the South Carolina fans and all the UConn fans and all the Iowa State fans. That'll be your engagement.
The three of us we sat down for a nice little dinner-ish at the Athletic Club after our event at Back Pocket last fall. Mm-hmm. So you got to know Grant a little bit, and at the end of each podcast, I let him come up from the basement and ask two questions, and then he goes back down and he grinds away at social media clips for us. So this is the part where I'm going to do that. Kevin is in the car and he can ask some questions as well. But Grant, take the lead.
Well, I was just curious from spring ball, like what are the rumblings on like certain players we should be getting excited about? Like obviously like, oh, okay. Like, yeah, you can be excited about like Cade coming up and being healthy, but like who's someone maybe we're not thinking about that we could get excited about for the fall?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of people. One, I think Jennings Dunker, if he stays healthy, I think he could be really big at offensive tackle. I just think he has he's massive, by the way. I thought he looked stronger when I saw him this past week and he goes, I lost 25 pounds. But he just looks bigger, dude.
He's the 14 protein shakes a day guy.
Yeah, I think he's down to 10 now.
Wow, weak.
Yeah, I know. He's got to get back on it. I think he cut a bunch of carbs out of his diet when he was talking to us. Another guy I'm going to throw in there as well. I'm going to go wide receiver Jarrett Bowie. I think there's a lot of – obviously, we saw him with the play from Deacon that hit social media, even though you could really only see – the guy's butt that was covering the camera, but Bowie's a good route runner, very physical blocker on the outside. So I think those are at least a couple guys to keep an eye on, at least for the offensive side of the ball. Defense, it's kind of hard to pinpoint at this point. Yeah. I mean, everybody's coming back, right? I'll probably say Jamari Harris. And the reason why I say Harris is because Harris missed the first couple of games last year with the gambling stuff. He missed all of the previous season before that. But he was just so overshadowed by Cooper DeJean, by Jay Higgins, by Castro, by Nick Jackson. I think Jamari has a real chance to be a really, really good player for Iowa this year. It will not surprise me if he's all Big Ten caliber, because if he doesn't get hurt, if you remember his bowl game performance and leading up to that bowl game performance, he looked like he was poised to just have a massive, massive breakout year. Yep. I think it happened this year.
Cool. And then my last one, can we just get the favorite Dua Lipa song, at least right now?
Yes.
Which one are we listening to like the most lately?
Illusion. That just came out on Friday. I think that's my number one most played song right now.
That's a good I don't want to be mean.
Good. They're all good. There's nothing bad in her discography.
Could we name the song about your lust for her delusion?
You could. Or Break My Heart. Okay. That's probably another one too.
Okay.
But I think she's dating somebody right now. I think his name's Callum, whatever, but that's just a placeholder. It's a placeholder.
Sounds good. Turn signal, Kev, you got anything? I don't want to cut you off if you have anything specific.
Sure, man. Dave, you've been to a few practices over the course of spring ball, I imagine. Just tell me about the energy around practice when you're there.
I think especially with the offense, I think that it's a different sense of excitement. I think that's the big thing. And the thing that stood out to me about Lester is he doesn't waste any words. Like, there's nothing he says that's without a meaning. There's always direction behind it. And the way I think he has a very good sense of understanding the balance between accountability and patience for still trying to learn the system. Like, we saw him get after a couple guys for making a mistake, but he's not just focusing on the quarterbacks. Like, I watched him go from the offensive line to coaching the wide receivers to the tight ends. Like, he's very actively, I think, getting to know the personnel. And again, I think for the wide receivers, there's just a renewed sense of I belong. You know, with all due respect to the guys that were playing the system, you know, over the past couple of seasons, for a variety of reasons, I don't think it falls squarely on Brian. I don't think it falls squarely on Kirk. I think there's a lot of different aspects that fall into it. But I think the wide receivers just feel like they're not perimeter blockers anymore. Like, they are an active part of the offense. I mean, we asked Caleb Brown what his goal this week was, and he said, I want 1,000 receiving yards. Not all purpose, receiving. And I don't think Iowa's had one since Marvin McNutt, when he was the Big Ten wide receiver of the year back in 2011. Iowa has not had an all Big Ten wide receiver since Marvin McNutt. So I think that that's probably a couple things that have stood out to me. The defense, I just think, is business as usual. Like, they know they belong. I think if you don't get motivated to play for Phil Parker every single second of the day, he will rip out your throat from the inside. But I just think there's a lot of excitement. It's also hard for me to, like, take too much away from spring ball, because if you're not excited for spring ball after not being on the football field for a couple months, you probably don't belong in Iowa's program regardless. But I think for the offense, it does seem like there's a different aura with everything going on.
It's good. I like it.
Well, that's good. That's good to hear. I can't speak from experience, though, that it's not always the most exciting thing to walk out to a hot-ass spring practice where you got a 184-minute schedule. But it's good to have a good face on it, put good energy in it, and just embrace that it's going to suck for a little bit, but you have fun to walk to it. So, good to hear, man.
I was going to say, it's Kirk's favorite time of year, though, I believe, too, right? It's fall camp and it's spring ball.
Yeah, he'd probably tell you that. Yesterday would have been a bad day to have spring practice. 80 degrees, dude, that's not what you're looking for in spring.
I imagine fall camp's grueling for you guys.
Yeah, but at least it's been hot during the summer. It, like, heat is different when you're used to, like, 55 degrees each day, and then it just decides, hey, we're going to throw 80 at you. So yesterday was ass. Camp is definitely hot, but you're at least, like, you know it's going to be hot. It's David Eichel. I had other questions. The first question we're going to get to the next time you come on, we'll do this in the summer, maybe in a month, 2 months from now, is the genesis and evolution of your beef with the other beat writers amongst the Iowa ecosystem, which I always think is great. Thanks, David, for coming on. Appreciate everybody listening tonight. Or today, or whenever you listen to this, we'll be back. I think we're going to try and get Jeremiah Searles on. We're going to try and peg him. We're not going to peg him. We're going to nail him down for a day sometime this week to record, and hopefully he'll be the next episode. Until then, talk to you next time. Peace. Hey, thanks for listening to the show. If you want more, you can check us out on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube by searching Washed Up Walk-Ons. And if you're interested in supporting the show, head over to patreon.com/washedupwalkons, where you can find bonus podcasts, merchandise, and other cool perks. Best part, half of your subscription benefits the kids at UI Children's Hospital. We'll see you next time. Hawks by a million.